Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
Including Intuka, trying to smash it into one
and
word.
And inform you in the afternoon.
Intuka puked on his pad.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, here are your two developing thoughts on the John Tavares thing and the Julian Edelman thing. My great epiphany, which is really just common sense, and Maz arrived at it yesterday because he's smart and I'm stupid.
Of course, I didn't say it on the air because I'm a jackass.
Because you thought that we were all beyond it because we would have been on the same wavelength as you, but we're just not. We're mortals. You went to a mid-tier borderline Ivy, and the rest of us are just, you know, BU.
Yeah, you're being nice. Yeah. The reality is I'm not that smart either.
No, sometimes it's just the best ideas are the simplest. And this occurred to me with John Tavares. Okay, this occurred to me with John Tavares. I had grown frustrated at hearing a lot of local hockey writers and national guys handicapping John Tavares to the Bruins by saying, well, the Bruins don't have the room. The Bruins have to jump through hoops. The Bruins have to clear money. How do you ditch off David Backes' salary? How do you clear David Krejci's money? How do they find the room to sign John Tavares? It doesn't make sense. They don't have the room. They don't have the room. They don't have the room. And I got sick of hearing that. Because there's a way to create room. You can trade a big contract if you attach a prospect to it. And, like, for example, as Steve Conroy pointed out in the Herald today, St. Louis might want David Backes back, but they want nothing to do with that contract. But if you give them a good young prospect to go along with David Backes, for example, Trent Frederick, who was drafted in the first round by the Bruins 2 years ago, I think, is from St. Louis. Sort of a big, sturdy center. Played at Wisconsin. He's from St. Louis. He is a former first-round pick just 2 years ago. If the Bruins trade them Trent Frederick and David Backes, will St. Louis take Backes back? We've paid half of Backes' contract, or nearly half of Backes' contract. They love David Backes there. They missed the playoffs last year. They missed his grit and his leadership in the room. And so could you entice St. Louis to take Backes back if you send a prospect along with it? And there's $6 million off your hands. So there's ways to do it. And I'd grown frustrated with this commentary that they can't clear the room. There's too many hoops. They can't figure it out. And then it occurred to me. They've already figured it out. They're meeting with Tavares today in Los Angeles, one of five teams that have been granted a meeting. 20 teams wanted to meet with the guy. 20 teams have wanted to sit with them. He's only allowed five into the room, six if you include the Islanders that he plays for. Would the Bruins get on a plane and pitch John Tavares on a what's going to be like a 7-year, $80 million contract if they didn't have the room?
No shot. They wouldn't even get on the plane, no.
They wouldn't get on the plane, and Tavares wouldn't let you in the room. As Jimmy pointed out in a story that we had before, John Tavares had prepared for him a 77-page booklet from his agents that contained a deep dive into each of the organizations that he was meeting with. And so contained in all of this research is the payrolls, what they're able to afford, what their future payrolls look like, what their rosters look like, et cetera, et cetera. So if the Bruins didn't already have the money figured out, they wouldn't be in the room with John Tavares. Simple. Doesn't that make sense?
Of course.
Like, just think of it the other way. The way you all are talking, or the people who are poo-pooing it, it's like the Bruins are going out to Tavares, they're pitching him, they're pitching him, they're pitching him. What if he says yes? What if he says yes to their 7-year, $80 million offer? And then they go home and go, oh, holy crap, we don't have the room. We don't have the room. What are we going to do? John, never mind. We don't have the room. That's not what's going on. They've already figured they already have the moves in their back pocket to make if Tavares says yes.
See, you know, the part of it that I don't understand, right, and look, not to like turn this into a media discussion, but just hear me out for a second, is that if a team's going after a big player, and the media starts asking questions about it, the local media, more often than not, the team says, I don't know. Nah, we doubt it. That'd be a hard one to pull off. Because they want to throw you off the scent, right? They don't want you barking up their backside for whatever reason, and so they want to throw you off the scent. In this case, Sweeney basically told everyone at the draft that they were going to be in on Tavares, and now they're out there. So why would you think that they don't have the room?
So all I'm saying is, he may not come here. He may not be a favorite here. He may want to go home to Toronto. That's where he's from. He may want to stay on the island because they can offer him 8 years and everybody else can just offer him seven. He may, for some effing reason, want to be in Texas and he chooses Dallas. I mean, those are the things you should be handicapping. His fiance just took a job in the Toronto area. Does that mean he's going to Toronto? Maybe. Like, those are don't handicap it.
Or maybe it means he's not.
Right, exactly. Maybe, you know, so handicap it on what he would choose and what he wants. Maybe he wants you, maybe he doesn't. He's thinking about you, otherwise he wouldn't let you in the room. But this thing about, and I heard it with the other teams too, well, how does Tampa figure out? Tampa's got this, Tampa's got that, and, you know, Chicago would have to do... If the team is getting on the plane and pitching John Tavares, they've already accounted for his salaries. Otherwise, they're not getting on the plane.
Yeah, they already know who they can move, how much money they're going to save, and what they're getting back.
So we don't know. We don't know whether it's Krejci or Backes or Krug or Rask or some combination or a retirement or a long-term injury or something. We don't know, and we can guess and play around with it, and we have been. But they know. And they have it in their back pocket. They have the money for Tavares. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on the plane, and Tavares never would have opened up the door and let him in the room. Period.
I mean, because again, as soon as they sit down, Tavares or his agent is going to say, well, you know, how are you going to make this all work? Like, what's it going to look like? And they say, well, you know, we got to move some money, but we get that lined up. Now, I doubt the Bruins would get into particulars and say to him, we're moving Backes, we're moving Krejci. Like, I doubt they would get that detail.
I don't.
I wonder.
You got to get in the room. What are you guys planning? Well, between us, this is what we've got. You got to lay everything on the table. You can't. You're trying to outmaneuver five other teams. You can't leave them guessing.
Yeah, I just think teams get guarded about that sort of information sometimes, and maybe they are. Maybe they are that open. I don't rule that out either. But in any case, regardless,
Tavares wants to know who he's playing with.
They're
too.
Sharing it.
They want to know who he's playing with.
Yeah, they're sharing it. They're sharing the information of what their plan is, whether it's generally or specific. And then beyond, like, I also wonder with Tavares, look, it's a hard cap league. There's really no other league like it in the States. The other leagues aren't hard cap leagues. Baseball doesn't have one at all. So hockey is really the only one where a player can say, I got to be careful here. Or a player has to say, I have to be careful. Because if I want $14 million, well, we're not going to have a lot of money to throw around other places, so the team might suck. So, and I wonder if Tavares is going through that process, too. Like, I wonder if that's part of the discussion. And so he looks at it and says, who do they got coming in terms of prospects? Who are low-cost options? Like, how are they going to manage that if I take X? And so I think the Bruins are in a good spot. The team that I fear is Toronto, because he's from there. And if he's talking to them, he's not afraid of going back, I don't think. And, like, you know, what if this is a guy who's got the kind of character that says, no, I want to be the guy that brings the championship to Toronto. I want to be that guy. Like, I'd have respect for him if he picked that.
So, again, the Bruins pitch to me, so it's not about money. Because, again, I think his contract's going to be roughly the same wherever he goes. 7 years, around $80 million. If he stays on the island, it's 8 years and $90 million. So it's somewhere between 7 and 8 years. It's somewhere between $80 and $90 million. That's what he's getting. Whether it's here, there, somewhere else. If he goes to Canada, maybe it's more to account for the exchange rate. If it's Texas, maybe it's less because there's no state income. But that's generally what we're speaking. 7 to 8 years between $80 and $90 million. You have the room. Otherwise, you're not going to be on the plane. So it's all about, does he want to play for you? Does he want to play in your city? Does he want to play for your team? And that's what I would focus on. Are those things good enough? The Toronto thing is there's a double-edged sword. You know, go home, play for Toronto, resurrect your hometown Toronto Maple Leafs. The other side, the flip side of that, Maz, is that is a hard place to play.
Sure man. It is, yeah. As maybe toughest in the league.
And the expectations and the pressure on him will be through the roof. He comes here, he's a star, but it's not, you know, it's not like the hopes and dreams of the entire city are going to be resting on John Tavares like they would in Toronto. It's a little different here. You're a star, but you're not, the expectations and pressures are not nearly what it was, or what it will be in Toronto. But it's a great place to live. You got kids coming up. Great place to put them in school, etc., etc. Those are the things that I would be pitching.
I mean, looking at the teams on the landscape.
I would also be telling them quickly that Mike Babcock, he's an a-hole. And guys love playing for Bruce, just FYI. And you know Babcock's an a-hole because you've played for him in the Olympics and all that, so you know what Babcock's about.
The coach can always change, though, right? Like, isn't it hard to make a decision on a coach?
I'm just saying. These are things I would be pitching.
So if you were a guy like him, wouldn't your decision really come down to Boston, Toronto, or stay with the Islanders?
Yes.
Yeah, if it's really about hockey.
I mean, I have a hard time believing a guy who grew up where he grew up, in Toronto, who is willing to take on the burden, it looks like, of going to play for that franchise with its wretched past and its inability to win, is going to pick San Jose or Dallas. It just doesn't feel right. It does, and maybe.
I mean, that San Jose team is a playoff team, basically year in, year
out. No, it's a really good team.
Yeah, but it's San Jose.
They went to the finals 2 years ago. They've go to the conference finals almost every other year. The last several, it feels like. That's a good team.
But it's San Jose.
I know. I'm with you. You don't matter in San Jose. You don't matter. No matter how good you are, you don't matter.
I don't know. He feels like an East Coast guy to me. You know, feels that way.
All right, so there's a Tavares item. What could Julian Edelman be thinking about with his appeal? We have insight in that, and then I promise your phones right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Despite the fact that it is very difficult, and I know Bill could speak to how difficult it is for these players to win cases like this against the NFL, there has been a precedent of one player fighting exactly, making the same argument that Edelman's making and winning, and that was in 2012 when Richard Sherman was popped for 4 games for PEDs. He fought the league on it, and he ended up winning because he said that the test was ultimately mishandled. That is what Edelman will fight here, and if he can convince the arbitrator, as Sherman did, there is a chance that this thing could be flipped.
All right, so that's Jeff Darlington. Says that Julian Edelman has based his defense on Richard Sherman's successful appeal of his PED test back in 2012 or 14, whatever year it was. Do we know what year it is? I cut and pasted the whole story and somehow like left out the actual year, and now it's bugging me. But it was one of those.
I think it was 2012. I think it was 5 years ago. It was now six.
2012, Richard Sherman appealed. And according, again, to Jeff Darlington, that Edelman's appealing along the same lines. I don't know if it's exactly the same lines, but I thought it would be instructive to go back and look at how Richard Sherman won his appeal. And this is, this is what it is. In his decision, the arbiter, his last name is Wallace, he writes that the collection process of Sherman's urine sample on September 17th was not ordinary. According to the written decision, Sherman's sample cup began leaking. So he pees into a cup and it begins leaking. To which the tester then grabbed another cup and transferred the sample. Documentation of the leaking cup was not originally on the submitted report following the test. And only when asked by a supervisor in October did the tester acknowledge the sample being transferred from the original cup. The tester later gave testimony that he'd never experienced a leaking cup before, yet he didn't feel the situation rose to the level of needing to be included on his report. Wallace, again the arbiter, wrote that the admission of the leaking cup from the report was a big deal, and that ensuring a sample is collected properly is the cornerstone of the program, and when an event occurs that does not happen routinely, or that the collector has never experienced while collecting the sample, it is incumbent upon that collector to note what happened. Accordingly, Mr. Sherman's appeal is granted and the discipline is reversed. So how I read this was that it wasn't necessarily that they had to change cups, is that it wasn't documented. That's just how I read it. Again, that if one cup breaks and they transfer it to another cup, it's okay as long as it's all documented, it's all spelled out in the report. And then the person making the ultimate judgment can determine whether something was compromised or not, but it's all got to be spelled out in the report. And it wasn't spelled out in Sherman's report, and therefore, the discipline is reversed. Doesn't mean he was exonerated. Now, Sherman got to go on and claim that, you know, well, that's why I had the false positive. He says, it was a weird day, a weird testing procedure, Sherman said. A lot of things went wrong on that day, and that's why the result came out the way it did, because he made mistakes and he did things wrong. Which is like, what? So you're saying because there was a crack in one cup and you poured the pee into another cup, in that time that the pee was going from one cup to the other, random floating steroid molecules in the air seeped into the sample and got involved when you went from one cup to the other. Like, I mean, how does that possibly?
It's possible.
It is.
I'm joking.
There's just random floating. So, but again, the rule, the procedure is it's mapped out. See, this is not the deck is not stacked against the players in this. It is a independent testing firm. These are independent arbiters. They're jointly chosen by the league and the players. And so it's, insofar as the appeals go, it's all pretty much on the level. If the drug testers do not follow exact procedure, Edelman will get, as you heard Beatles say in that promo right there, Edelman will get off just like Sherman got off. And it's not necessarily that the sample was tainted, or that they can prove that it's tainted, or that they even think it's tainted. If you don't, if it's not documented properly, that means to an acquittal, if you will. And I just thought of that because in the ESPN report yesterday, we were trying to figure out what the hell it meant. Edelman has two lines of defense. One is that they couldn't tell exactly what the substance was when they first tested it. The other line of defense involves a mishandling of the documentation and delivery of Edelman's test results. I mean, I still don't know what that means, but when he said mishandling of the documentation, again, we were joking that someone smeared mustard on it right. and rubbed out. Like, what does that mean?
Used it as a napkin.
No, because it doesn't say.
You get sloppy during lunch.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, mishandling. It's not mishandling of the results. It's mishandling of the documentation. So what the hell does that mean? And does it mean something like what Sherman did? You didn't document everything that went on that day when you collected my urine.
No, look, there are very specific steps on how this is done. I'd be willing to bet.
It could be something as simple as the time of the day wasn't registered or something like that, you know, like, or an I wasn't dotted.
Look, I mean, Murray, I rule out nothing on these things. I'd be willing to bet that when, you know, when they laid out the protocol for this thing, like, it even specifies whether they're to use pencil or pen. Like, stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
Right?
So color of ink.
Yeah. Right, so you can't, you know, so that you can't erase a result or anything like that. And you know, I know you were saying earlier, the deck is not stacked against the players. They bargained it. Like, this is all, this was all negotiated as to how it's going to happen.
These are their rules as much as they are the owners.
Absolutely. Rules. They all agreed on the process. So if the process was not followed, sure, Edelman has a case. Yep.
But just so you know.
The question is whether his complaints are legit.
Exactly. But just so you know, because you've already heard it, you know, yeah, they're out to get the Patriots. This is not Article 46. This is not Deflategate, Spygate. This isn't some sort of matter in front of Goodell where Goodell's the judge, jury, and executioner. He's none of it. He's not judge, jury, nor executioner. Those are all independent entities. And if Edelman has a legit case, he will get off.
You know, if anything, it feels like the players might have picked the actual testing company because it sounds like they just hire clumsy idiots. Right. How does this even happen?
It's true.
No, but there's no doubt. There is a series of steps that has to be, you know, acutely followed. Like, you got to follow every step to the letter of the law or you leave open the possibility of an appeal. It's not unlike a police officer, like, you know, in an evidence at a scene, you know, collecting evidence. It's got to be all done to the letter of the law.
Okay, Bruin Stuff and Edelman, your thoughts. Here's Pat on the South Shore on Julian Edelman. Hi, Pat.
How are you?
Good, Pat. What do you got?
I heard that Edelman, they were saying that he popped positive, but they didn't know what it was for.
So they didn't know, originally know exactly what to call it, but they did subsequently. I'm sorry to cut you off. So Burt misquoted himself. Leave it to Burt Breer to misquote himself or to just sort of misword the thing. But these are all designer steroids. The cheaters come up with new compounds every day. So they can change the actual final composition of it. And so what was on a banned list now doesn't quite match what was on the banned list. But the way they do the testing is still the individual markers show up. The individual compounds show up. The individual anabolic markers. I know I'm saying that kind of right, but probably not totally right. Basically, they just didn't know what the name of the designer steroids was because they change every day. They change every month. So they knew he tested something. There was something in there. The steroids were in there. The anabolics were in there. And it just took him a while to figure out exactly what to call it, what the designer steroid was called. Apparently, they have the name. They notified Julian of the name. They know it. He knows it. They all know it. It's not like the league's still fumbling around and say, well, what is this? They know what it is. They just didn't know immediately. Jason in Canton on the Bruins. Hi, Jason.
What's up? I just don't think that David Backus, we're going to be able to get anything for him in a trade, no matter how much we try, because he's 34, he's got a terrible contract. He's signed for, like, what, 3 more years?
Yeah, I don't want anything back.
Yeah, what do you want to do with him?
Just get rid of the money. I don't need anything back. In fact, I know I'm going to have to send more just to get someone to take him.
Like, correct.
He mentions before that prospect, Trent Frederick, just to get rid of him. So, like, and I'm okay with that. If that means giving up, not every, you know, there's some prospects you want to keep, that's fine. But if you think you have some expendable pieces in your system, and you should, you've got a slew of these young forwards. You know, if it meant giving up Danton Heinen along with David Backus, just to get rid of the money to sign John Tavares, would you do it?
Yep.
Heartbeat. yesterday.
I would. I mean, because again, to me, Heinen and Donato, I'd get rid of one of those two guys. I don't think you're going to be able to keep them all. So I would absolutely do it. Like, you know, to me, that makes all the sense in the world. And again, this is the beauty of having a good player development operation. You need to move money, you attach it to a player. Here you go. You know, I mean, absolutely you do it. In a hard cap league, to move money is like a trade. That's what you do.
I'm not really expecting anything back for Backes or Krejci, really. I don't need anything back. I need the room. I need the money. Krug, I think I would want some, you know, I'd like to get, you should be able to get some return on Krug.
Sure.
There's value there. Walter in Delaware. What do you got, Walter?
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I agree with both of you, and I think you nailed how the Bruins are going to actually make this work. They have a plan, and Maz, you nailed it with how do we get rid of bad contracts you attach to youth. But I also think Tavares wants to know the following. One, who's he going to play with? So if you move Pasta to that line, that's going to be significant. Two, is his contract going to affect the signings down the road with the Bruins' youth in terms of their organization? They don't have to pay as much over the next several years as Toronto might have to. And three, this might be insignificant, but it's not to the cap. The taxes in Canada are much higher, so he might be asking for $14 million in Toronto as opposed to $12 million in Boston.
Yes, and I think that's all going to come out in the wash. If there's a tax rate in one state versus the next, or an exchange rate in Toronto versus here, that's all going to be adjusted, right? Don't you think?
Yes. I mean, these guys are on that stuff at this stage. So and when I say these guys, the agents and the player, they recognize that it's not apples to apples all the time. It's part of the reason why Stamkos is able to take the money he took.
But the previous point that he made about Tavares is going to want to know who he's playing with and who they can keep and who they can't. And this is why I think the Bruins don't tell him everything, but you got to pitch him on the plan.
Sure you do, yeah.
This is who you're going to be playing with. This guy, yes, he's up. Because you know, Tavares is going to ask, well, what are you going to do about so-and-so? What are you going to do with McAvoy? He's up next year. Well, we've got a plan to sign him, and we're going to pair him with this, and this is our plan. That, like, you've got to sell him on it. So you've got to let him know what you're going to do. So I think that's not a total open book, but...
close.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, the guy's making an investment in you as much as you are in him. So you're asking a guy to give you 6, 7, 8 years of his career in the case of the Islanders, and you need him to be able to say, okay, I feel comfortable doing this if I'm going to be here for 7 years. So you got to share some stuff with him. I'm just telling you, if they had plans to, well, that's not even a good example, because I was going to say if they had plans to trade Bergeron, they'd have to tell him that or he'd be pissed. So they got to be forthcoming. They got to be open. Okay. Yes.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Janta.
Magenta?
Janta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome to day two in the Tavares Watch at the CAA offices in Beverly Hills, California. Today, there are two teams that are scheduled to meet with Tavares and company. At 10 o'clock, TSN Intel has the San Jose Sharks first up, followed by the Boston Bruins at 3 o'clock to make their pitch. Now, to recap day one, yesterday here on the street corner outside CAA offices, the Maple Leafs were the first to fire a salvo, 3 o'clock p.m. local, a presentation lasting about 2 hours, followed at 7 p.m. New York Islanders, led by Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, making their latest pitch to Tavares that lasted about 2 hours and 15 minutes before closing out the evening.
So there's one other interesting nugget. Again, the Bruins were today. Hags says the word on the street is that it was Neely, Sweeney, and Cassidy making up the Bruins contingent, meeting with John Tavares. No current players. Bruins keeping it simple and about hockey. Then Mark Diver, who covers the Providence Bruins, some Boston Bruins for the Providence Journal, says the Bruins have reportedly checked in on impending free agent winger Michael Grabner, which is significant only because Michael Grabner played with John Tavares on the island. And this were the NBA, you would say that's very significant. I don't know if it works quite that way in the NHL, but, you know, you can at least draw that line and wonder, are they trying to get Tavares' guys in here, or at least one of his guys in here, because I think they have a real shot. So those are your Tavares items right there. This is all I know. The Bruins have the room. They've already figured that part out. What has yet to be figured out is if Tavares wants you. Peter in Weymouth. Go ahead, Peter. What do you got on the beast?
Michael, please stop claiming that Torrey Krug and Grizzlick have the same skill set, that they're redundant. They're not. Torrey Krug is an elite offensive defenseman. Top five in the league for points by D-men. Grizzlick is not that guy. He's solid. He's good. The league is changing. You can easily have two smaller D-men.
Can't we get better, though? And let me ask you this, Peter. First, let me ask you, if you gave Grizzlick Torrey Krug's playoff time, excuse me, power play time, gave him the exact same power play time that Krug gets, I'm not telling you Grizzlick scores a half point a game like Torrey Krug, but don't you think he scores a hell of a lot more than he scores?
Yeah, maybe so, but he's not putting up 60 points, and Krug is.
Okay, so maybe 40, maybe 45. You understand that Grezlik's worth 1.4 and Torrey Krug's worth 5.25?
Yeah, fair enough. But I just think your mentality that, you know, we need to have four beasts back there like Shea Weber and Zdeno Chara, that's outdated. Like, it's a skating game. You gotta be able to skate and move the puck, and these guys can do it, and we can go with two of them. It's fine.
Okay, I hear you. I think there's an upgrade there to have. I think having just one of Krug or Grezlick is fine. Having two of them is just a little too much. And I'm all for skating and moving the puck and all of that, but Krug is really rough in his own end, man. I mean, and if you want to play him on top of Grezlick, he's getting more minutes. And Grezlick's no prize there either. I just think it's just a little too small, and you should be gunning for just a little bit more. And trust me, they are.
And look, on Krug, to your point, 59 points, but 24 of them are on the power play. I mean, it's, you know, you're approaching almost half. Like, so what's that, 45%? Like, so, you know, to me, the drop-off from one to the other is significant, but
I'm telling you,
you can't have two small guys in the playoffs like that. You can't do it.
You give Grezlick that power play time, he's putting up a lot of points, too. Maybe not as many, but he's putting up points. Robin Blackstone on Edelman. Hi, Rob.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just talking about the PED category. You know, Edelman got injured, and he had a certain amount of time to recover. And I'm wondering if maybe some of the medical techniques for his recovery, since he has a limited amount of time to get back to shape, if maybe it was something like that. But basically the PED category I want to get your opinion on is it's very broad. And from what I've watched, Edelman is, he's been very consistent every year, and he doesn't look like he takes steroids.
Oh, Rob. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, we don't mean to mock you, but, I mean, really.
Was it, like, what do you think the category was? Like, because it's PED, it's a big category.
No, but, I mean, what do you think a steroid user looks like?
I think he looks like
an NFL player. Any of them. Name one. All of them.
I mean, do we have any pictures? Do we have the body issue photos, Vinny, on the simulcast that we can pop up there? Or any of Jules's... I mean, how about just the Instagram thing the other day with him running with his shirt off? I'm going to tell you this. Maz does not use PEDs, and he does not look like that.
No, you'd be surprised.
I'm just saying. Like, Edelman is freaking ripped, shredded. I mean, I think he totally looks like a PED guy.
Find photos of him from 2009, his rookie year. Like, he looks like a completely different person.
I think they all do.
I mean, particularly the guy that's 5'10" and small. That guy needs it more than anybody. The beating he takes, his body's going to be able to withstand, you know, 245-pound guys knocking him into next week.
I mean,
out there at OTAs, looks like he hasn't lost a step, still making the same cuts he was making before he hurt his knee. Ah. Nah, he's not using anything.
Maz has been in the locker rooms. I covered it for 9 years. You walk through an NFL locker room, and it ain't. That's not how the human body was designed by the great almighty. It just wasn't.
Oh, no, they're not normal.
I mean, it's not even normal. Not even close.
It's like someone took a bicycle pump and pumped them up.
Or shred. I mean, there's that, and then there's just the shred, like the HGH guys, just the pure tight shred. Like,
you see it in the face. It's like,
that ain't normal.
All sucked in.
What I used to see is they used to have, this is what someone told me, I used to notice that a lot of guys had braces on the inside of their teeth. Inside of their teeth. And guys in their mid-20s or late 20s, braces, but on the inside. Like, what the hell? Why does this guy, that guy have these braces on the inside of their teeth? And someone said to me, well, it's the HGH. It spikes growth in
The skull,
your teeth, your
Barry Bonds.
The word I'm looking for is cartilage? Is teeth cartilage?
No. Teeth is bone.
Or bone, it grows certain things in your body, and teeth is one of them. So if you have a little bit of a crooked teeth situation on HGH, you need to get braces to straighten them out, or else, you know, you get fanged or whatever. You got to straighten your teeth out. And so that was a thing. It's like, please, that's laughable to say he doesn't look like an HGH or a steroid guy.
Take a good look at Barry Bonds' head.
When he forehead.
Was in the middle of the steroid era. Look at him early and then look at him later. His head grew about three sizes. His head is huge. It's gigantic. He's got a gigantic head. It's like a watermelon, for crying out loud. The thing's just like a pumpkin up there.
Here's Paul. I'm sorry, Pat on the Cape. Did you just call us back?
On the South Shore?
All right, wherever you're from, Pat. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So, guy, I heard your explanation about that test. I have a question about the other guy that just called. Yeah. Who is it on PEDs in the league? What do they just pick and choose? Like, you know what I mean? Who's on them and who's not on them?
They're all on them.
Like, that's what I'm saying. So, pick who they want?
No, you just get sloppy or careless. Or some on a random day, the tester catches up with the cheater and they get you. But anyone on any given day in that league could test positive if the testers were good enough and they got to everybody. So, I mean, that's just how I feel about it. And so, I mean, I think Edelman's as unlucky as anything, or just had a bad day, or got sloppy.
Got sloppy.
Or the people that he was working with, his trainers, whether that's Guerrero or the guy out in Arizona or whoever he's working with, led him down the wrong road or gave him a bad thing or, you know, didn't realize that something was on a list that was, and they just screwed up. Yeah, because if I've listened to Victor Conte, who says, if you get nabbed on any of these pro sports drug testing, you know, programs, you're a moron. You're a moron. So you take some of these compounds, they clear in 12 hours. And so it's like, just do it at a certain time of day, and you're pretty much okay. So you pretty much have to screw up, I think, to fail one of these tests. Leo in Maine on the Bees. Hi, Leo.
Hey, how you doing, Felga?
Good. What do you got?
As far as Tavares goes, I don't think he'd be the right fit. Number one, wouldn't you rather save that money this year to go after a Doughty or a top-line defenseman this year, where the Bruins' strength is centers and wingers coming through their pipeline?
Okay, are centers really a strength anymore with David Krejci looking the way he looks?
I said coming through their pipeline, Felga.
Who's that? Forsbacka, Carlson, and Frederick?
Right.
Okay,
you don't know what they... That's their strength.
No, but...
The kids coming up.
Okay, Leo.
They have nothing in their farm system that could be a number one defenseman.
Okay, on D. So, I mean, you're right about they have more forwards than D. No question about it. I think Forsbacka, Carlson, and Trent Frederick project as third and fourth line guys. They're not... Forsbacka, Carlson, for sure, is not a high-end offensive guy. Frederick, I don't know, maybe. But remember when they drafted him in the first round? They said this guy projects more as a grinder, which is like, why are you drafting grinders in the first round?
Sure.
But so, I mean, I don't know. I don't track the amateur prospects, but that's how they're known. Tavares is a whole different level.
No, look, to me, if you can get a stud center, you got to do that. Absolutely. And I actually feel a little bit better about their D than this guy does. And look, I'm counting Carlo. Like, let's see what happens there. But between him, McAvoy, Lozon, Vakanainen, like, those are all guys that they took with pretty high picks that they think can play in the league.
I'd still like a D-man. I just think, you know, saving it for Drew Doughty or Erik Karlsson, I mean, fine. I mean, those are going to be the highest paid defenseman in the league, and maybe the highest paid players in the league, and be hugely sought after. But we had a previous caller who gave me the whole free agent list. There were a lot of guys on that list.
Yeah.
So something tells me there might be something for him in free agency next year, because, you know, Doughty goes somewhere, Carlson goes somewhere, and then you're dealing with the second tier, and there's some good names on that second tier, it feels like. So maybe that is a long-term plan there. Mike in Medway on the drug testing. Hi, Mike. Michael!
Hey, what's up, guys?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
So, I've been a scientist for about 20 years, and I can elucidate a lot of what you guys are saying about drug testing, making a lot of these different steroids. You can actually come up with a compound, add a couple different molecules on the end of it, and you're right, you can stay ahead of the testers pretty easily.
So basically, just explain how they didn't know exactly what it was initially, but then came up with it. Like, how does that happen?
So you, like you said, you were right on point when you say you look for different markers and things that are steroidal compounds. But essentially, you start adding other things on the ends of these molecules, and ultimately, you can come up with things that are not regulated, are not federally controlled, and you could probably sell them on the street without any persecution.
And it's just a matter of, I don't know, connecting the dots.
Exactly. And then tracking down the various things to understand what that does to the body, and obviously it's enhancement.
Okay, so basically the point when people say they still don't know what he tested for is not accurate. They know what he tested for. They didn't know the day of, because these things are constantly changing, and the cheaters are constantly changing the compounds just enough that they've got to, you know, sort of catch up with it. But they do know. They knew within days. They notified Edelman exactly what, when they sent Edelman the letter saying you're suspended. They didn't send him the letter saying you're suspended, but we don't know what for. They said, no, you're suspended for, you know, stanisodal phenol, you know, whatever. Like, they gave him the name. He knows what it is. They know what it is. They just didn't know that day.
No, I'm chuckling at the people who just, like, want to grasp on to anything they can. Because, yeah, they don't even know what it is, Felga. He was taking extra vitamin D. He was taking B12 shots, Felga. Okay. No, you're right. It's this league-wide conspiracy. They don't know what the hell they're doing. He was taking steroids. Okay? He was taking steroids. He might get away with it. He wouldn't be the first. But he was taking steroids. Let's not be stupid about this.
Final word comes your way next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, there is only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. All right, two pieces of sound here on the final word today. We'll start off with a quality when hosts aren't listening from Felger today.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
And now, how to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
Shoot.
Welcome to day two in the Taveras Watch at the CAA offices in Beverly Hills, California. Today, there are two teams that are scheduled to meet with Taveras and company. At 10 o'clock, TSN Intel has the San Jose Sharks first up, followed by the Boston Bruins at 3 o'clock to make their pitch.
And then the Bruins met today. No word there.
No, they're meeting at 3 o'clock LA time, which I believe is 6 our time.
Aha! So there you go, a time. How do we know the time? Who reported that?
The clip that I just played?
Oh, I'm sorry.
When hosts aren't listening. Clip it, Jimmy.
No, we were discussing our strategy for the upcoming segment.
Maz said something to me. He distracted me, and he. I didn't hear the key part of that report.
Yeah, blame it on me.
Yeah, I am.
This has been How to Tell When the Hosts Aren't Listening.
Dope.
That's pretty good.
How about me?
And I'm sure there'll be more of this coming up in the Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, but if you missed it earlier, Maz on Chris Sale and how he should be handled going forward.
He will go the Wednesday before the All-Star break, which gives him the biggest possible rest going into the break.
He goes first on the way into the All-Star break and last on the way out.
Exactly. Then they play on the Friday coming out. They shouldn't start until Tuesday. If they do that, he'll get 2 weeks. 2 week break in the middle of the season.
Is he in danger of being an All-Star?
Maybe. And you know what? I'd tell him,
turn it down.
Nope, play some Xbox.
Good God.
Time for Fortnite, pal.
let's fire it up.
Yeah, sir. Get off that building. Like, that's the way I go. Don't let this guy pitch in the All-Star game. Beg out of that thing. Get out.
Don't make an excuse about an injury. We'll just fire up the Xbox.
All right, we're online. He's so good with that sniper rifle. Chris, get on there. Oh, get on top of that pipio. Oh, it's so good. This is how you get out of it, bro.
Hold them out until Tuesday. They're at Detroit. Then they go to Baltimore. So either way, you should be able to beat those teams. You don't need Chris Sale to pitch twice against those crap bum organizations. Save him to give him 2 weeks. Two solid weeks. And if it sets him back a little, so be it. Fine. So he's not as sharp on July 24th at Baltimore. Who gives a flying fish on that one?
Excellent.
So angry.
Oh, that's good. It's strong take.
Love Murray's. I love Murray's Fortnite.
He's playing. He's pitching tonight. The Fortnite kid coming off a loss.
Man, I'm back, bitches.
Hold on. I just got to get some in before I pitch tonight. An hour from now. Hold on.
All right, I'm online. Yo, Mookie, jump off the battle bus and help me mow down these bitches. Get some, yeah. Ain't no stopping me when I got these SMGs in my hands, bro. Oh, you're triggered. Take your L like a man, bitch. I don't want to warm up.
Aw. David, you have to pitch tonight.
Oh, I don't want to do that. How much are they paying me? $30 million?
Felger and Maz.